welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Willis, it's been one of those weeks.
It was one heck of a week.
Yes. Not the good kind either, because it's still 2026. Gosh, I wish it was almost over.
Yeah.
Alex said even he had a week, too. So we're going to hear from Alex today, too.
Yeah, I'm excited about the topic.
We try.
Yeah.
We thought we'd take a break from, you know, the chaos, the typical chaos. Let's talk about something interesting.
Yeah, there
we
go.
For a change. We have been covering the gas situation here in California that, of course, will also shiv Nevada and Arizona. So if you are unclear about what's going on with the fuel situation out here and you think it's all about the Iran war, please go to gascrisis.org. And at gascrisis.org, it will take you to our radio page. It'll just direct you directly to the gas thing. And you've got letters from the refineries there. You have really all the facts you need. Don't take our word for it. We have found experts for you. So you've got video, you've got audio, and you also have a lot of print that is available. So get smart about that because...
Yeah, it's coming for you.
Yeah, the fuel ships coming from overseas have stopped, and for whatever reason, California decided that they needed to import their a percentage of the fuel. It's like 20% drop now in what we have available. So, and the legislature just rolls on, and the governor rolls on, and they keep telling us it's not a thing.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
Well, just get your electric car on order and. And everything will be fine.
Just don't plug it in because the grid can't handle it.
That's
so
true.
Anyway, there's that. So that's our bad promo. Good promo, Drew Thomas Allen. He's our guest today. We have him as a hostage for two full hours. He is the author of Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup. Just when you thought that this was done, it's not done. And some of the information has come out. So the rest of it is the declassified story of the Trump-Russia delusion. Dear God, wasn't it delusional? He's the West Coast VP at Publius PR, where we get tons of our fun guests, actually. They are a premier communications firm where Alan has worked as a publicist for many of the, and he has worked as a publicist for many of the biggest names in politics. Wait for it. Charlie Kirk, Peter Navarro, Dr. Naomi Wolf, Dr. Ben Carson, Alan Dershowitz, Carrie Lake, and others. How great is that? So his book, that is what came across my email, actually, Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, that just came out. He also has For Christ and Country, which is a terrific book, The Martyrdom of Charlie Kirk. I had that listed on the site for today. I forgot to tell you, today's May 17th, 2026, just in case we play this later, which I'm sure we will.
It's also Rededication Day. You know about that?
Oh,
yeah, Trump is rededicating the country to God today.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And which is kind of interesting because his other book is America's Last Stand. You know, it's interesting. It says, will you vote to save or destroy America in 2024? I would submit that we should just scribble out the four, make it a six, and let's re-release the book.
Let's rerun that.
Let's rerun it. Drew, thanks for loitering with us on a Sunday.
Oh, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So where would you like to start?
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess, you know, in terms of the book, too, being called, you know, Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, the Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion, you know, D-E-L-U-S-I-O-N.
Yes.
It always was so delusional because anybody with a couple of brain cells to rub together knew that the premise of Trump-Russia collusion, right? It was based on this idea that Putin would prefer Donald Trump to be president over Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And so to believe that, you had to be a pretty stupid person because the greatest gift the Russians ever got was the Obama administration with Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. And we know, of course, that Hillary Clinton, she was instrumental in helping the Russians attain, you know, a large percentage of our uranium production via this Uranium One deal. And her husband, Bill Clinton, at the time this was going on, he was paid, you know, $1 million or $500,000, I believe it was, by the very Russian bank to speak in Moscow that had an interest in this deal going through. So this idea was stupid to begin with, and it was unbelievable that they were able to get as far as they did with this idea. Although, of course, the beautiful thing is that it didn't work in some ways, because Donald Trump was elected. The American people still rejected Hillary Clinton, despite the greatest assault on our republic in modern American history, and I would argue in the book, in all of American history.
Yeah, it was a spectacular failure of a plan, but they succeeded in screwing up a lot of people's lives and sending a lot of people down, really down the wrong road. There are so many people who still believe that was a real thing.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, it doesn't matter. That's the thing. I mean, with the left in particular, I mean, they basically immunized themselves against the truth. And they continue to go back to the same people who've lied to them about everything for, you know, their entire adult lives or longer, and still look to them for truth. And it's a really sad thing. But with the Trump-Russia collusion scandal, you know, what's interesting about my book is it doesn't start with Trump-Russia collusion, actually. It goes back to Benghazi. And Benghazi is really kind of an origin point that launched the hoax, because if you didn't have Benghazi, and just to refresh the audience's memory, you know, Benghazi, that was a premeditated terrorist attack on September 11th, 2012. It was less than 2 months away from Barack Obama's re-election campaign. He was running against Mitt Romney, and U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens was killed, in, as well as several other Americans who were trying to defend him. And instead of telling the truth, which was, hey, you know, there's a terrorist attack in Benghazi, Libya, he decided, the White House ordered the CIA to revise their talking points 12 times. 12 times to scrub it of any reference to a premeditated terrorist attack, which everybody knew it was, and instead to send Susan Rice out on the Sunday shows to spin a lie that it was a spontaneous protest. You know, it was like Girls Gone Wild in Benghazi, and it was because of some anti-Muslim video. And most people think that that is a Clinton hoax or Clinton scandal. And it sort of was, obviously, because her department, the Secretary of State, failed repeatedly to send additional manpower and to reinforce the temporary mission facility in Benghazi. So they ignored warnings forever. But people should understand that Barack Obama is so bad that he's even worse than Hillary Clinton and the Clinton family. And so what Barack Obama did, it wasn't about, the lie wasn't to protect Hillary Clinton, it was to protect him, because he was running on a campaign that said, hey, I got Al-Qaeda on the run, you know, I just killed, you know, Osama bin Laden, hurrah, you know, I'm the Billy Graham of Islam in America, but, you know, I've really got those Muslims on the run, and, you know, the jihadists are hiding. And of course, that wasn't true. We had a ton of jihadist attacks even during his first year of his first term. And so Barack Obama did this, and what we see is what? We see his willingness to corrupt the intelligence community to bring about an end that is political. And so we saw that on steroids, obviously, when you get to Trump-Russia collusion, because he weaponized everything, corrupted everything to go after then-candidate Trump. And more importantly, if you didn't have the Benghazi attack, you wouldn't have had congressional investigations that revealed what? That Hillary Clinton used an illegal private email server, and that she was selling access to the Department of State in order to enrich her family via the Clinton Foundation. And those two things were swirling in a cloud over her head as she entered 2016, and she was desperate for a massive hoax that could distract the American people from her own wrongdoing and try and pin it on Trump.
Yeah, another thing I find kind of amazing is now that a lot of this, or most of it, has come to light, we still have people in office that supported this, knew about it, and they're still, you know, they just wash their hands of it and move on. I don't know how they get away with that.
Well, what was really kind of shocking that we've learned from the declassified documents, and this is the only book that has that information, it just because other books were written that were pretty good about Trump-Russia collusion, but they didn't have Tulsi Gabbard. Trump wasn't in there again. They hadn't declassified these documents. And basically, these declassified documents, I mean, much of it is the declassified Durham Annex. So I don't know. I think that some people probably think that John Durham, good guy, you know, he came in, he was tasked with investigating the origins of Crossfire Hurricane, which was, you know, the FBI's investigation spying on the Trump campaign. And he came in, he did a long investigation, he said, look, yeah, I mean, this was wrong what they did, they didn't have any evidence to base it upon, and I think some people started to cheer like it was some kind of, there was some kind of justice coming, but what Durham did is he actually classified the most important part of the investigation, which is that the Russians have long been spying on the U.S., and I'm not even talking about just the DNC, but the Russians have been spying on the U.S. for a long time. They had spied on the Obama administration as early as 2014. They actually accessed his own emails, although they told us at the time it was not, wasn't the classified stuff, so don't worry. Just the normal emails, you know, about what he had for lunch. And so we knew this was going on. And so the memos that Durham classified were these. The FBI, the CIA, the intelligence community was actually intercepting Russian memos that were being sent to the Kremlin. So their intention was to be honest and accurate, okay? And one of the most shocking revelations, and one of the greatest ironies of all of this, is that the most accurate contemporaneous account of what the Democrats and Obama administration and Hillary Clinton and the DNC did comes from the Russians. And it can all be corroborated. And so for example, so people understand, you know, because people say, oh, you know, it came from the Russians, so therefore you can't believe anything that's in it. Well, people might remember that Ratcliffe, he... Before one of the debates between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, he actually released information that said that, look, Barack Obama was briefed himself on August 3rd by John Brennan, the CIA director, on Trump-Russia collusion, right? So that was, if people remember, that came out. He said, hey, look, John Brennan briefed the president on this Clinton plan. And that was never denied. Well, guess where that information came from? It came from Russian memos. It came from this buried, you know, annex, it ended up being called, of John Durham. And so we see, for example, in these memos, things like, hey, Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, has established a back channel of communication between Hillary Clinton to update her on the progress of the FBI investigation, which obviously is a huge scandal. Well, what happened? Does anyone remember the Phoenix tarmac meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch a few days before she was going to be exonerated? So, of course this was happening. Of course she was receiving updates. And what the FBI did, I mean, think about this. You are a crooked organization inside the Obama administration, all right? And you're trying to make the scandals into Hillary Clinton go away, and you're trying to push a scandal and give it legitimacy that's going to, you know, cast doubt on Donald Trump. And at the same time that you're involved in this type of behavior, you're intercepting memos from the Russians that are basically spying on you and telling you, hey, the FBI is doing this. Hey, I mean, it's an unbelievable situation that unfolds. And what the FBI and the intelligence community did is they dismissed this as uncorroborated raw intelligence, even though it could have been easily corroborated. And at the same time, they were getting raw, uncorroborated information from the Steele dossier, right? Donald Trump pee-peed or got pee-peed on by some hookers in Moscow. And they took that and they elevated it to gospel. And they used that as justification, pretext, to spy on Donald Trump's campaign. And meanwhile, the Russian memos, which were telling us in real time exactly what was actually going on, they dismissed. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, the more the pieces of this were exposed, the more, I mean, honestly, the crazier it sounded. I think it got to the point where people thought, they can't possibly have done this. But, I mean, I think there were a lot of us that thought, of course they could.
Well, at the time it sounded outlandish, but they just kept pushing it and pushing it. And I think a lot of people thought, well, geez, if they're still talking about it, it must be true.
Real.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think that's what they were counting on.
Yeah, of course. Repetition. Drew, we have to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back. Our guest is Drew Thomas Allen, author of Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, the declassified story of the Trump-Russia delusion. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Dancing girl is making eyes at me. I'm sure she's working for the KGB in this paradise. Ah, cold as ice. Oh, moonlight and vodka takes me away. Midnight in Moscow is sunshine.
Classic Sting. Always loved the Russians. He was probably helping Hillary. Okay, so I mean, I think most of us feel like, well, you know, these crazy people on the left, you know, they're evil, but they're not geniuses. This was pretty fancy.
They're like Bond villains.
There you go. We hang up on Drew. Drew, come back.
He's on.
He's missing.
Oh, here I am. Here I am. I had temporarily muted it for some reason. I'm sitting here talking to myself.
Yeah, that's crummy. Come on, you have the Drew Allen Show podcast.
Well, yes, the podcast I do with my two young children, my 3-year-old and my 16-month-old, tied up somewhere, you know, with my wife. So I was dealing with those kiddos. But
then
anyway,
there's that. Then there's that. So that's another book.
Yeah. Another book. A real thriller. Well, you guys are right. I mean, you know, you talk about this kind of, you know, Bond villain type thing, and in some ways, it was so stupid, and it failed, right? I mean, it did fail because Trump was elected, so it failed in that sense. But the sheer number of people that had to be involved in this,
yeah,
to get it off the ground and pursue it. I mean, you're talking about dozens and dozens of people, and obviously it includes, it probably involves hundreds of people, because there are a lot of people involved that will never know their names, that were working at the FBI or working in the intelligence community, that knew this was going on, and they didn't do anything.
And didn't say anything. That's really where the volume of people is. They're in the secret keepers.
And the media, the media people that were complicit in this, because, you know, it's kind of a circular feedback loop. That's the way this worked. So the, you know, Steele dossier, Mark Elias at Fusion, at Perkins Coie at the time, and then obviously Fusion GPS, which was the opposition research firm that hired Christopher Steele and was coming up with this Trump-Russia collusion hoax. Well, they would leak, like, memos from the Steele dossier. But the Steele dossier wasn't one big dossier. It was a series of memos, and then it came to be called the Steele dossier when it was all completed. But they would leak a Steele dossier, like a PP tape, you know, to some, you know, left-wing news, you know, organization, and they would print it. And then that would be taken to the FBI, and they would use that as evidence, you know, to justify, you know, their continued investigations. And it just kept circling like that over and over and over again, even though, you know, everyone knew it wasn't true. I mean, it was so unsubstantiated. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, there was a curious moment in all this, right, where it was finally revealed that the Russians had hacked into the DNC. Now, what's so insane about all this is that the Gang of Eight was briefed in the summer of 2015. So somewhere around July or August, the Gang of Eight was briefed that the Russians had hacked the DNC. So we didn't find out about it until a year later, right? But so some are the Gang of Eight briefing until, you know, you can't tell anybody. And ostensibly they were trying to, you know, study what the Russians were doing, et cetera. They didn't want to tip their hat, et cetera, I guess, which is reasonable, I suppose, to some extent. But then the FBI actually went to the DNC and they told this low-level IT staffer towards the end of 2015 that he believed the Russians had penetrated the DNC servers. And they didn't escalate it. They didn't tell anybody at the DNC, not Debbie Wasserman Schultz, nobody. So, I mean, you think this is a pretty big deal, right? It's like the Russians have hacked into the DNC and nobody says anything. And so the FBI keeps communication with this low-level IT staffer for months and months. And they're texting each other and emailing each other. And then finally, one day, something's triggered, and, you know, they can see some sort of evidence that somebody they believe to be the Russians is there. And the FBI, who obviously had been trying to follow this and research it and study it and catch them for, you know, 8 months, they make the inexplicable decision to just not look into it. They let the DNC and the Clinton campaign just outsource it to this organization called CrowdStrike, which is, like, unbelievable they would do this. Like, oh, you know, we're so worried about the Russians. We know they're in the DNC. Now that we can see they're there, all right, we're going to leave. You know, you guys take care of it. It's crazy. But the reason they did that can be found in the Russian memos. So the Russian memos talk about how the FBI didn't have enough evidence to directly say that it was the Russians. And so the Russian memos are reporting to the Kremlin that they are going to use CrowdStrike. They're going to use CrowdStrike to push the narrative that this was a Russia thing. This is in the Russian memos, and that's exactly what happened. That's why I say these Russian memos are so important. And I don't think most Americans even know about this. I don't think they've read the Durham Annex. But time and time again, what the Russians are reporting on is, in fact, what happened. And so don't tell me it's raw intelligence can't be corroborated, because I'm corroborating it right now on the show.
So apparently that wasn't true. What do you think as you read through all of this and you're assembling all this, I mean, you know, books don't write themselves. You go over and over and over and over and organizing stuff. What was your overall sense of it that you didn't have in real time? You know, way back when we were looking at this and we all kind of figured it was a hoax, but, you know, as you were going through the documents and stuff.
Well, I didn't have a firm understanding of how early this began, you know, because I think my understanding before reading all of the declassified documents was like, yeah, at some point, you know, Hillary Clinton went to the Obama administration and they decided, like, you know, to let this thing go and to get involved, you know, and that would have been like, I looked at it as purely responsive, right? Like the DNC was hacked by the Russians, and so Hillary Clinton just weaponized that and said, hey, I've got a bright idea. Or somebody on her campaign said, hey, I've got a bright idea. Let's just pin this on Donald Trump. But it didn't start there. It started as early as March. So on March 31st, there was a meeting with Deputy Director, I guess, Andrew McCabe at the time from the FBI and other officials. Obama wasn't in this particular meeting yet. But they talked about this Clinton plan. It was a little vaguer than the one that they talked about come August. But they talked about a Clinton plan to, you know, basically tie Trump to the Russian mob and mafia. And what's interesting about this information and tidbit from the Russians who were spying is that that's exactly... So Fusion GPS is the opposition research firm that the Clinton campaign hired to create the Steele dossier, okay? But Fusion GPS had actually been working for, I think it was the Washington Examiner. It's in my book, I forget which outfit, but they were actually working for some conservative organization to dig up dirt on all the candidates. And one of the things that they were looking into with Donald Trump is his alleged associations, because he had business deals in the past in Russia. And so they were trying desperately to tie him to these mafia figures in Russia. And so at some point, Fusion GPS, whether they went to the Clinton campaign because they wanted to get another fat contract, or however it worked out, Fusion GPS already had that info. And so they went straight to the Clinton campaign, and they were basically pursuing that strategy, right? And this is months and months and months before the DNC hack and the release of those emails. And so what it tells you is that this plan was actually hatched like around the time or even before Trump was even the official nominee. And I think that's pretty shocking.
Yeah, so they didn't really care who they buried. Whoever it was going to, this was going to get hung on them.
Yeah, and it would. I mean, I don't think it could have worked on anybody else. I don't know. I mean, it was kind of a perfect storm. But the thing is, too, Guccifer 2.0, I guess, is what they called him, and he probably was Russian. But Guccifer, you know, released the first tranche of hacked emails, and all of those emails were like opposition research on Donald Trump, and so. That's proof, too, that the Russians weren't really just trying to nail Hillary Clinton. I mean, there's greater evidence than this. I mean, it's total BS. But they released, you know, opposition research in those files on Donald Trump, and the media didn't say much of anything. Nothing at all. It was only a few months, like, you know, a couple months later when they released the you know, big avalanche of information that showed how, you know, the DNC was colluding to take the bid away from Bernie Sanders and rig it so that Hillary Clinton was the nominee. That's when they decided to launch the Trump-Russia collusion hoax. But even with that, it's so fascinating because the real story is not... I mean, the Russians didn't release anything. It was actually Julian Assange that released it. So the actual headline should have been Julian Assange, you know, leaks the you know, contents of these DNC emails, etc. But that wouldn't have been a very strong story to serve the Russian narrative.
Yeah. Well, and then you had Bernie, who honeymooned in Moscow, so that would have been awkward.
Well, and John Bernie's a communist, too. Remember, the CIA director is a communist.
Gosh, I've already... You know, some of these people, it's weird. We've had so many bad people loitering in our, you know... It's just been a cavalcade. Cavalcade of badness. How about that?
Yeah, it's unreal, and I mean, we're still paying the price for a lack of accountability. One story I can tell you that I did not expect to find, it wasn't something I was looking for as I wrote the book, involved Barack Obama and collusion with the media to secure his reelection after Benghazi. So when I was researching Benghazi and refreshing my memory on how the scandal unfolded and the investigations, I found, you know, a congressional document that referenced Barack Obama going on the Late Show with David Letterman and with his own mouth telling the American people the lie that Benghazi was a spontaneous protest that was a response to an anti-Islam, Muhammad video. And so I went to search, and I couldn't find the video anywhere. It was scrubbed from the internet, and so I kept digging and digging and digging, and I used something called the Wayback Machine, which it captures websites as they appeared on certain days kind of sporadically. So even if a website is taken down and the evidence is done away with, you can use the Wayback Machine to go back to that, to the date before, and you can actually see what was on that webpage before it was, you know, something happened. And so Barack Obama, I did find the video. Some small account with like a dozen videos who had no following published the full, you know, 10, 12-minute segment interview of Barack Obama on David Letterman. And it got like 120,000 views. And I found that this video was embedded at places like the Washington Post. It was embedded on other websites. And it couldn't be accessed anymore. I tried to find the page. It had been pulled off the internet. So I went in the Wayback Machine, and I could see that video was up. And I started looking at that and said, this is kind of interesting, especially because we've seen how the media's reacted to, you know, so-called threats from the FTC, Brendan Carr right now, saying, hey, you know, we could fine you, we could take away your licensing for doing what you're doing on Jimmy Kimmel, et cetera. And so, you know, they're clutching their pearls. But it turns out that, you know, the FCC didn't have to threaten, you know, anybody back then. They were happy to self-censor. So you can go on YouTube, right, and you can find, like, hundreds of interviews from the Letterman show. You can even find clips from that Letterman interview with Obama. But the part where he himself says, yeah, this happened because of a spontaneous, you know, protest, et cetera, it was literally removed from the internet.
Oh,
and
wow.
So... And I mean, think about how damning that would. I mean, Mitt Romney should have won that election. I don't like Mitt Romney, He lost it. People, that's the other thing. People think that Barack Obama really was some messianic candidate that couldn't be beat. He should have been beaten both times if we had a Donald Trump running against him. But, you know, when it was John McCain, they started attacking John McCain's honor and pulling the race card. And so he stopped calling attention to the fact that Barack Obama was a radical communist terrorist, you know, whose state Senate campaign was born in Bill Ayers, founder of the Weather Underground, an actual, you know, so he backed off and then he lost the election. And then Mitt Romney had to do in any of these debates was go in and say, Mr. President, you yourself said on the David Letterman show that this attack and these murders were the result of a spontaneous protest because of an anti-Islam video. The CIA and everyone else has since come out and said that's BS. What would you like to say to that, Mr. President? But he never did it because he was such a loser.
Yeah.
And it was removed from the internet.
You look at it and what about Flynn? Because Flynn was a major casualty in all this.
Yeah, he was. That does make its way in the book. It's the second time I've written about it, actually. I wrote about it in America's Last Stand, too. But, it was so insane. So, you know, with Flynn, and this is the other part about why Barack Obama is totally guilty of treason. It was an absolute coup, and he was responsible for it, and he knew about it all along. But, you know, you can't just make these claims, so I would just say first, we know it was a Barack Obama coup because, one, he was briefed in August of 2016 about this Clinton plan to vilify Trump by blaming him, you know, and inventing Trump-Russia collusion, right? So he knew about it. And then after Trump won the election, he should have backed off. But instead, in December, he ordered an intelligence community assessment, knowing that it was BS. So Trump's already won the election, and he decides to now try and attack the president who's coming in, the incoming president, by saying, oh, yeah, all that Trump-Russia collusion stuff, it's true, and the CIA says so, you know? And it was a little magic trick because, you know, you've got over a dozen of these intelligence communities they're supposed to weigh in, and he only used four. So it was a joke. And they omitted stuff, and they lied about how they used the Steele dossier as their evidence for this, and it was so, so crazy. So that's the first thing. So, yes, Barack Obama is absolutely guilty of this. And then there's something else I was going to say, but then now I forgot because I said that first.
Well, good. You get 2 minutes to remember it. Isn't that handy? What good timing.
Radio's the best.
It is. Live radio sometimes is marginally the best. But radio in general is the best. Our guest is Drew Allen, author of The Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, The Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion. So if you still know people who think this actually happened, this is a show for them. It'll be listed without free enterprise moments, a.k.a. commercial, later today at We the People Radio.
Radio.us.
Rides like a knife, it can cut deep inside. Words are like weapons, they wound sometimes.
Many lies they spin across the ocean. Too much money they spin upon the moon. Well, that's you, they make it right. I hope they never sleep at night. They better make some changes and do it soon.
Yes, this is a music-rich environment we're into today. So many possibilities. Okay, did you find your thought, Drew?
No, but I'll just start somewhere else and maybe it'll come to me.
Oh, hey, Alex has a question for you.
I have a quick question for you. Have you watched the TV series, The Good Fight?
No.
You should check it out. Big Disclosure series. I highly recommend it. I think you get a kick out of it on Paramount Plus.
It's called The Good Fight?
The Good Fight.
On Paramount Plus?
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. I will do it.
Making a note.
So, Drew, what do you think was going through the Russians' heads when all this was going on, knowing
laughter?
That it was all BS and that the Americans were falling for it? It doesn't say a whole lot for us.
No, they're probably laughing their AWSs off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, they're watching us and reporting on the fact that we're literally sabotaging, screwing ourselves. And they don't have to do any work. Yeah. I mean, think about it. The Russians didn't have to do any work to try and destroy our so-called democracy. The Democrats did it. The Obama administration did it. The Russians didn't do anything. The Russians do what they always do. They read a bunch of crap on us. They spy on us like we spy on them and everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And they watch the Democrat Party do the work they've been wanting to do for, 60 years. And it was highly effective. I mean, that really poisoned the country. And we haven't recovered from it. That's why it's so important people understand the truth about what happened, is because in many ways we're just as vulnerable today, if not more so, than we were back then. Because the Democrats are as rabid as ever to return to power and finish the job. And they see how effective Trump has been. They see that he's serious about, uncovering a lot of this stuff and exposing them. And so they're desperate. And if you look at how bad 2016 was with Trump-Russia collusion, you fast forward to 2020 and you have what many believe to be, myself included, a stolen election. At a bare minimum, the way they weaponized the COVID narrative to fundamentally change the way we vote in this country with the mail-in ballots and dead people and voter rolls that are never purged and harvesting ballots and curing ballots, that in itself is all they needed to do. You didn't have to hack in with space lasers, It was just what they did with the ballot process. And we'll see what comes of that. But that was an escalation. And then you get to preceding 2024, and you have unprecedented lawfare against the President of the United States, literally trying to put a candidate in jail so that he can't run for election. And I just think that we're so numb. I think that we're so numb to how serious this stuff is. I mean, this is the United States of America. And we've been living for, nearly 12 years, I think, if you go back to include the Obama administration, kind of a USSR Soviet-style government. And, how any Democrat who claims to love this country or tends to have any kind of patriotism left, I mean, that you could support the Democrat Party today after all they've done, not to mention their support of things like, cutting off the balls of, 5-year-old boys,
there's that. That's all coming back to haunt them now.
Yeah. Well, just so you guys know, too, I mean, so I'm the California columnist for the Daily Signal. So, I live in California. I'm up in the Napa Valley. So, all the stuff that goes on in this tremendous state, I'm very familiar with.
Yeah, and it just keeps going. It does seem like, I mean, people would, it's easy to say that all of this started in the last, 20 years or so, but I think a case could be made that this started long before. We just didn't have the tools really for the exposure, Walter Cronkite kind of gave us all the information there for a long time. And so there were things that happened that never really came to light. But, this stuff all makes, like, Watergate and that kind of thing just look like child's play. There's just so much more of it. That was the big scandal of the time. I mean, that was the scandal of a whole decade. And do you think that would almost not be a scandal now?
No, it's not a scandal now. I mean, a lot of people, and there's a lot of evidence to back up that was kind of a deep state hit job as well on Nixon. But even if what you know, the traditional narrative is about, you know, Nixon and his involvement with Watergate and breaking in and, you know, trying to search for documents, which is such a stupid thing anyway. It's like there was no need to even do that. I mean, he was historically, like, unbelievably popular. But even if he had done that, I mean, that's nothing compared to, you know, inventing an entire hoax and weaponizing that against your political opponent during campaign season. And not only... And what makes it so bad is not, like, it's one thing that Hillary Clinton is such a scumbag that, you know, she invented this kind of dirty campaign trick to smear. I mean, you know, I get that. That happens all the time, you know.
Yeah.
People smear. Some people do it worse than others without any shred of evidence. But it's one thing for her to simply say, hey, I'm in trouble. I need something to go after Trump. We do the opposition research. Let's just spin this scandal that makes me look bad, and let's try and get away from, you know, these investigations by the FBI into me and what I've done, and let's just try and pin this on Putin wanting Trump to win. That, you know, that's horrible, but that's okay. But that's not where it ended, because she was working with the Obama administration and the FBI to actually launch a investigation based on that dirty trick to give it legitimacy into the Trump campaign. And then after he won, Obama elevates it to a coup by ordering the ICA, you know, that puts the, you know, government stamp of approval on this narrative that it failed to elect Hillary Clinton. So, you know, that's what people have to understand. I mean, you had the entire apparatus of the Obama administration that were involved in doing this. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, where would we be if it had succeeded? You know, where would we be? I mean, so it's an astonishing thing they did.
I think another thing that kind of scares me is they failed to go after any of the players in this thing, and there's no real incentive not to do it again. You know, and if they ever get back in power, you think this kind of thing is going to just resurface? You know they're going to go after Trump.
It's going to be,
it's
going to be so much worse. Look, part of this and part of the revelation from all the research, too, it's like John Durham. John Durham classified this annex that would have told us all this information. They really would have buried these individuals, but he hid it under classification. What you're dealing with is the statute of limitations. Now, and that's the thing. They slow walked this thing on purpose so that these people could, you know, it was a ticking time bomb. Okay, well, do we make it to 4 years or 5 years or whatever the statute is for these crimes? And they did succeed in many ways. But, you know, what you're seeing with James Comey, for example, and that particular strategy, it's really brilliant. I like what I'm seeing from the DOJ right now, because it's simple. You know, to try and build conspiracy and all these things that relates to Comey and get him on something, you know, it's he said, she said. It's bringing in a dozen FBI people to testify. This is actually very clean, the 8647 thing. And obviously they have enough information to have convinced a grand jury already that there is evidence, you know, to indict. And so that's kind of interesting. But I do think that Kash Patel is going to use, you know, this conspiracy to defraud the United States, you know, statute, because there is no statute of limitations. In other words, every time another act is performed to further that original conspiracy, the clock resets. And so, but to build that particular thing, I mean, it has to involve two or more people, and that's probably easy. But, you know, to make this kind of, you know, tight so that you can actually not embarrass yourself when you go and bring it all the way and then nothing happens,
right,
it takes a lot of time, you know, to build those types of cases to convince a jury, right? Because this is the U.S. We still believe in the rule of law. I mean, some of us, at least if you're not a Democrat. And so you've got to prove that case. It's not enough to say, you know, we know, sort of, but you got to have the evidence. And so I think we will see that, but justice is unfortunately very slow.
So do you think the Comey case will reset the clock on any of this Russian stuff?
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's possible that in the pursuit of, you know, that investigation into the 8647 and his intention behind it and everything else, it's completely possible that, yeah, they uncover. I mean, if you remember, a lot of this stuff that the Democrats got a lot of people around Trump on process crimes, right, with the Mueller investigation. So the Mueller investigation, $32 million taxpayer funded, wasted on something they knew was never going to turn up Trump-Russia collusion, but it ensnared people around Trump and got them prosecuted for things that had nothing to do with Trump-Russia collusion. So it's within the realm of possibility these sorts of investigations, too, do turn up some other evidence. But I would also say that I think one of the strategies, probably, is that, you know, they try to get you to turn fellow comrades. So it's like how the Democrats got, you know, Flynn to basically plead guilty. He didn't do anything wrong. A judge later found that he didn't do anything wrong, but he pled guilty. Why did he plead guilty? Well, because the FBI said, we're going to destroy your son. We're going to destroy your family. We're going to bankrupt you beyond repair. We're going to put you in jail for 600 years. Would you like to plead guilty now? And he said, yeah, you know. And that's a tough guy that they got to do that. Mm-hmm. And so they just turn the screws, and they turn the screws until you squeal. And so, you know, I think the hope is that with John Brennan and James Comey, that they can't survive, you know, waterboarding, you know, that they actually stick their head up and say, okay, all right, I'll tell you what I have on this person or that person.
Yeah.
We can only hope.
Yeah, because I always said it's only going to take one person to fold and the whole house of cards is going to come down. But I was amazed that nobody ever did come forward and say, hey, I know some stuff. And it just all just quietly went away.
Yeah. Well, you know that always any crime committed with more than one person.
Yeah. And then people start dying, of course.
Yeah. And then there's Hillary's list of whatever we're up to now, 90-some-odd people.
Yeah, the body count initiative. I'm still alive, but if something happens to me, you know.
You didn't commit suicide?
You weren't sad today?
No.
No.
I love my two daughters and my wife. So, it's, you know, Bongino was on, I guess, Hannity started some new kind of podcast thing, right? And I saw a clip of Bongino on there, and he was talking about some of the, you know, they found all these burn bags related to Trump-Russia collusion and other things. And, you know, Dan said, you know, to Sean that, hey, you know, I'm actually scared because, and I think that part of what he was referring to is, like you said, like, all of this was going on. It was so obvious in the FBI, and nobody said a word.
Yeah.
Every single person just let this happen. I mean, what kind of fear do you have to strike in somebody to get away with that, to keep silence across the board? I mean, you don't see that with conservatives. You got leakers all the time, right? You know, James Comey, the Trump administration, you know, everyone's leaking all over the place and nothing ever happens. But you don't see much of that with Obama or anything else, or certainly Hillary, because, you know, you know that they're actually mobsters that will have no problem making something happen to you. It's very Putin-esque, you know, just make you disappear.
Yeah, come on.
And, yeah, but you know, he asked me earlier, you know, some of the surprises, and I think to just revisit as an older person, I'm 39 now, so to have a little bit more maturity and have been following politics, you know, more years now, to have a greater just understanding in general of how things operate, especially as a publicist and working with some of these higher level people, I think to go back and revisit the Obama administration and realize how evil he was, you know, to realize how corrupt his administration was, that was shocking. You know, like I talked about in the book, to refresh y'all's memories, and hopefully it makes everybody mad, but in his first year of his first term, you had a shooting at Fort Hood in Texas. And the guy that carried out the mass shooting was a guy named Nadal Hassan. And he was a soldier, he was a captain, he was a psychiatrist, and he jumped on a table in the Soldier Preparedness Center, I believe it was called, with two handguns, and he shouted out Allahu Akbar. And he killed a dozen or 13 Americans and wounded, you know, dozens of others. And it was obvious, right? If a guy jumps on a table and yells Allahu Akbar,
yeah, take him
like,
at his word.
Motive confusing to somebody?
Yeah.
Only to Barack Hussein Obama, our first Muslim president, the Billy Graham of Islam. So with that incident,
hold that thought, Drew. We hit the wall here. Got to do some news.
You got it.
Found a good song for Hillary, though. Here we go. We're listening to We the People. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio on May the 17th, 2026. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Okay, we are here with Drew Allen. His whole name is Drew Thomas Allen, just in case he's in trouble with you. You can use his whole name then. He has written a book called Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, The Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion. He also is the author of America's Last Stand and another book, For Christ and Country, The Martyrdom of Charlie Kirk. He does a podcast under his own name, so that's pretty fun. He's an in-demand political analyst in radio, on radio and TV. Super fun. And we're having a really good time with this, Drew. And sorry we had to cut you off midstream. Again, back to live radio. Podcast, you can just kind of go, right? Don't you get to go as long as you want?
Yeah, you just kind of go. I mean, they're different mediums, but you know, I like the style, and I like, you know, radio, TV, podcast. You know, you have to develop different you know, muscles in terms of communication.
I like
TV's the worst. I hate TV.
Yeah, TV's got and it's
4 minutes. No, 4 minutes. Make your case. 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, see, and that's when we started this like 15 years ago. Everything on radio, you were hearing people for like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. I'm like, well, what the heck? I didn't learn anything. I learned nothing.
Yeah.
So we decided, we were long before Joe Rogan, we decided, you know what? It'd be better to bring the same person on for the whole time and learn a bunch of stuff. And it's turned out to be a super good idea, and we've never gone back the other way. And we stopped taking call-ins, like, after we got one, because it's like, okay, this isn't fair to bring on somebody who actually knows what they're talking about to be harangued by someone who spent 5 seconds listening about a, you know, listening and formulating a question. That just seemed wrong. So we've kind of maintained this format the whole time. We kind of like it.
It's a great format. It's rare.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of nice about it. We can take topics that require time, you know. It's funny, I was thinking on our way over, next week is Memorial Weekend, and that's always kind of hard to find people who have free time. Our go-to person for so long was Dr. Peter Vincent Pry on, you know, 4th of July weekend, Memorial Day weekend. He's like, oh, I would much rather do this than, you know, hang out and eat hot dogs with my family. He was really funny. Father's Day. He was a great patriot, and he had a ton of information. We were always I'm working out of his playlist today. We always did all the Russian stuff with his shows. So we're channeling the great Dr. Pry today. So Drew, we cut you off mid sentence.
Yes. We're talking about Barack Hussein Obama, Billy Graham of Islam, who covered up the jihadist attack at Fort Hood during his first year, during his first term as president.
Yeah.
And and that's why I say, you know, it's so important that people remember these things in history, because Trump-Russia collusion didn't just happen. It couldn't have just happened. You know, the groundwork was laid long before, during Obama's first term, because what he was willing to do even during his first year, and that people in the FBI were willing to... And what you notice, too, when you go back that far, is you understand what the deep state is, because it's not this, you know, amorphous, you know, hard to understand thing. It's actually concrete individuals. So, you know, Robert Mueller was there, and the FBI is director, you know, under Obama. You know, Victoria Nuland, that name comes up a lot. I mean, all these people. But Obama was willing to lie about, you know, that jihadist attack. And he's just come into office. I mean, where do you get the cojones as a president for like 2 months to have your intelligence, you know, community lie and label it workplace violence?
That was one of those things that I think everybody thought would ultimately be walked back, and it never was.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And you know what it did too is it deprived the families of those who lost loved ones of payment. You know, it deprived them of actual, like, it hurt their livelihood. They lost a loved one because of a jihadist attack, but they didn't get any of the kind of financial benefits that would have come from acknowledging the reality. And so he didn't care who he burned down, who died. You know, it was all to protect this ideology. And, you know, I really go into in the book, too, about his, you know, kind of Islamic, you know, background and who he was and why he did these things, because, you know, he always followed Obama's golden rule, and that was anytime there was an act of radical Islamist, you know, mass violence, jihadist attack in this country even, he would always have to then talk about how great Islam was as a religion. And he did not show that favoritism towards Christianity. As a matter of fact, he went to the National Prayer Breakfast, I think in 2015 was the year, it's in the book, and he actually lectured a room full of Christians about how, you know, Christianity wasn't so good either. He basically tried to, you know, create a false moral equivalence between Islam and Christianity, as if they're a bunch of bloodthirsty, you know, equivalent of jihadist groups in Christendom out there going and killing people. You know, that we have apostates, that there's the equivalent of a caliphate that's waiting to reign over, you know, all Christians throughout the world and bring, you know, I mean, it's just crazy, but he did that. I mean, and he got away with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because everybody was sort of, stunned into silence, I guess, in a way it was...
Well, we were supposed to all be in awe with his ability to communicate, which... I never saw it. He was also supposed to bring the races together, and
that worked
stop
out well.
All. You know, it got worse than it ever was under him, in my opinion. There were just a lot of things that Obama was supposed to fix, and he just made everything worse.
Deliver, right?
Yeah, no,
he was going to deliver it to us.
Oh, he delivered all right.
Yeah. I do.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great point.
Yeah, I do think there were a lot of people who became really disillusioned after they saw what he was up to, but not enough. And oddly enough, just, I guess it was yesterday, I was going through a bunch of replies. There were texts sent out regarding the election, and I should pull it up. I ought to find it before we get off the air. Somebody actually responded with a list of Russia stuff about Trump. And I'm like, I've had to respond. He's not on the ballot. He wasn't one of the endorsements we sent you. But still,
yeah. Like,
there was a woman as recently as yesterday afternoon who was still just seething mad about Trump and his Russia connections.
Yeah.
I don't know how you fix that.
That's all they have. Well, you can't. Their brains are completely broken. I mean, look, there's, not that we'll get too deep into this, but, you know, I can personally trace the time frame of the radicalization of Democrats and leftists in this country from personal experience, because, you know, I grew up in Dallas, Texas, but I went to an all-male Jesuit elitist college prep school for high school, and it was very left-leaning, you know, social justice, you know, that's the Jesuits thing, which is just, you know, Marxism. And all my friends and teachers were all Democrats, and I was not a closeted Republican conservative back then. I say conservative because, but ideologically, that's where I am. And then I went to college at Pepperdine in Malibu, but I was a theater major on an acting scholarship, so all my friends were Democrats. And then I moved to New York City after graduating as an actor.
Whoopsie.
All my friends were Democrats. And then a year into New York City, I moved to Milan, Italy, and I got a job working in fashion for Marc Jacobs. And I lived in Italy for 2 years, and that was not exactly a, you know, conservative environment either. And so the point is, I accrued many, many Democrat friends over the course of my life, and I was never convinced, obviously, to convert to stupidity, but I still had those friends. And, you know, 2016, I supported Trump, and then 2020, I supported Trump as well. 2016, the friendships weren't broken, right? So 2016, they were still able to be friends with me, even though they didn't like that I supported Trump. But by 2020, after 4 years of this radicalization with Trump, Russia collusion, everything else, I don't have a single childhood friend left. I don't have a single college theater friend left. I don't have a single friend from my Marc Jacobs years left. Every single one of them, to varying degrees, either directly told me to F myself or, you know, or just walked away.
Or something else real subtle like that.
That wasn't, and so it just tells you a lot about the mindset, the mentality of those people. And by the way, after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, people I went to high school with, people I know or have known, they were celebrating his murder. So it's like the Democrat Party, obviously not every Democrat is a horrible, evil person,
right.
But it's the same thing with Islam. You know, not every Muslim is a violent, horrible person, but the radicals are all coming from that group. So, and I think there's something to be learned from that comparison, because, you know, 9/11, it was, you know, Pakistanis giving out candy and celebrating our pain in the streets overseas. You know, 9/10, Charlie Kirk, it was, you know, your professors and your neighbors that were celebrating right here in the good old U.S. of A. So it's pretty scary.
It is scary, and we've done a whole bunch of shows on Islam. A lot. Enough that they're under their own tab on the website. But the most interesting thing we discovered through that journey was a book. The name of the book is It's All About Muhammad. And the guy wrote under a pen name, Frank Burley. But It's All About Muhammad is a biography of Muhammad. Very, very compelling. Easy read. Kind of long, but just a real page turner, and so many things people don't know about the underpinnings of that whole thing. They think it's like, I mean, actually, when you read the book, it's like reading about Jesus in reverse. And I don't think people understand that the Quran is twisted and turny, and you know, then you wind up not understanding it and having to kind of take people's word for it. But hey, read about the guy that started it all.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's not a secret, and, you know, look, I mean, it's like you shouldn't be, you can be respectful, but as a Christian, like, you're not a very good Christian if you think that all religions are equal. You know, one is true, and the others are not, right? And Islam is as false religion as it gets, and, you know, it's amazing because I love the apologetics and stuff, too, and I spend a lot of my time studying and researching, you know, the Gospels and the history of Christianity. And everything else. And then I've also recently been reading about Islam too. And, you know, it's amazing that these guys, you know, now they're Muslims, but, you know, they had to graft themselves onto our history. You know, they couldn't even invent their own thing. You know, they had to come in and, you know, try and appropriate aspects of Christianity. And, you know, it's just amazing to use that as the that's what's amazing about, I mean, Christianity, the more you scrutinize it, actually, the more convincing it becomes that it's the one true, real faith.
it is kind of amazing. And you know, it's like, go do whatever you want. It's a little bit like this guy that is Jared Huffman, your congressman, over where you are?
No.
Okay. Yeah, he's...
I've got Mike Thompson.
Okay. Well, pretty much everybody is better than Jared Huffman, but he's coming for us because they have, through their massive Prop 50 gerrymandering, they've taken over MODOC, Shasta, and Siskiyou counties and slurped us in with the coast. But Jared Huffman, I mean, his quote just from him, super proud of it, too. I am the only member of Congress willing to admit there is no God and there is no afterlife. So I guess if words mean anything, that means the rest of us are all lying and we're just too chicken to admit it. And and yet there will be an over... We're in a Democrat plus 25 district here. And people will vote for him because he has a D behind his name. It's like, okay, well... Besides the fact his policies are all absolutely 100% against everything we think. I mean, he isn't a nice atheist, right? Like, I'm an atheist and you're a Christian, so you go do you. He's not one of those. He's...
No, he's always on the attack.
Yeah. I mean, he was after Sean Duffy about the portrait of Jesus walking on the water for the Maritime Academy. How dare you put that back up there? We took it down. You know, you're forcing religion on people. So, yeah. I don't know, it's kind of weird, you know. I, those of us, I was raised Catholic, I went to Catholic school in Connecticut, and, you know, we didn't care if other people weren't Catholic. Like, okay. I don't know, nobody really minded. And that seems to not be okay anymore.
Well, no, there's an effort to, you know, it's, I mean, part of the reason we're in this problem is because, you know, Christians had been overly merciful, you know? Mm-hmm. We've been overly open in approving of things that are totally against, you know, our foundation of this country and everything else, you know? And they have, you know, beaten us with a stick about it, you know?
Yeah.
They've invented lies like separation of church and state, which is not a real thing. It comes from, you know, Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists. And the irony of that letter, of course, is that it's not about, you know, keeping Christians out of elected office. It's about keeping the government, you know, from interfering in you know, your ability to practice, because Baptists were a minority, you know, congregation and group and denomination at the time. And but you know, I would look at somebody like James Tallarico, who's trying to run for Senate in Texas. I mean, you see Democrats all the time that try and use their false Christianity to push their agenda, whether it's abortion or transgenderism or gender theory. They have no problem trying to cite scripture and bastardizing it. So mm-hmm. Separation of church and state, I mean, it's just more of this kind of Marxist ploy where, you know, the rules don't apply to them. It's Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals, right? Where, you know, you make the enemy live up to their own rules. But in so many cases, the left invents the rules that they then hold us to. They're not even real rules. We don't need to be held to those rules.
Right.
But they invent them and stick them to us, and they say, hey, you know, you guys, separation of church and state, all right? We can put the transgender stuff in the room, but the Ten Commandments? No, we can't do that.
Can't
you know, that stuff's bad. It's just the basis of Western civilization.
Well, and the mind-blowing part, it's funny because it's all part and parcel of your book, that the moving of the goalposts. So we have to take a really quick break, but we're going to come back with our guest, Drew Thomas Allen. He's the author of Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, the Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion. And then we're going to talk about some other stuff, too, as you've noticed. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out. Does that make me
What a shot you could be if you could shoot at me with those angry eyes.
Ah, yes, the angry eyes. So much of that going on. So, we've got plus or minus 20-some minutes. What haven't we covered, Drew?
Well, we haven't solved world peace or world hunger yet.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Well.
Who haven't we maligned? Let's stick with things we do well.
Yeah.
Who have we forgotten to rope in and hang in this segment?
Well, we haven't done Newsom the favor yet.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
We could bash him for a while. I'm really good at that. Actually, I've devoted my career at the Daily Signal to ruining his future.
Nice.
But it's not very hard. I don't have to do much except just...
Tell people what he did.
So just let him gesticulate like he's conducting an orchestra of dummies, you know? I mean, this is one of the weirdest guys I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he's like... You know, here's my thing on Newsom. He thinks he's Barack Obama, but he's actually Hillary Clinton without a skirt.
Are you sure?
He is like he's like an evangelist who doesn't believe in God.
Yes, that too.
That too.
But, you know, I think that Newsom's biggest problem actually is not going to be his record. It's that his wife is more insane than he is. And she's like less likable than he is. So Jennifer Siebel Newsom is the one who's going to actually prevent him from having any shot at the White House.
But he's not really sleeping with her. Isn't he sleeping with someone else? Is he going to get a pass because he's actually not sleeping with her?
Well, yeah.
There's that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Him and Barack Obama would probably spend the night together. Maybe Siebel and Big Mike are sleeping together. Who knows?
You heard it here first. So follow that. So what's the deal with her?
Which one, Big Mike or Siebel?
Siebel. Or, well, you know.
Yeah.
That's a different show.
I don't actually believe that she is blah, 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 but whatever. I love making fun of her because she's such an awful person, too. But, no, Siebel Newsom's just like, I actually was on someone's podcast a few weeks ago or maybe a month ago now, and she went to high school with Jennifer Newsom. She was, like, in her class or something. And she said, you know, he was like, what you'd expect, you know, she just kind of faked back then, but pretty, wanted to be a Hollywood actress and that sort of thing. So they're not surprised that she's with Newsom and all that at all. But, you know, Siebel Newsom, I mean, she's out there, and every time she goes on a podcast, it's just more footage to play to show how radical and unrelatable the Newsoms are to the rest of the country. Because, you know, you can sell that crap in California and shock the county, or you know.
Doesn't really work so good here. Might work where? Does it work where you are? We all think it does. Does Napa fall for all that?
Yeah, I mean, Napa's still red, but it's not, you know, plus 25, 26, 27. And it's kind of interesting getting somebody who doesn't work in wine who lives up here who, like, you know, my kids go to school, right? It's like you hang out with parents and you're going around the table when you first meet and everybody, you know, all anybody wants to talk about is like, you know, how are you so rich? Or like, what do you do? You know, who's richer? And so, you know, like, what do you do? Oh, well, you know, my daddy and mommy, they own this amazing winery. Oh, my daddy and mommy own this piece of land. Oh, my daddy and mommy, you know, and me, we own this restaurant, whatever else. Like, okay, cool. Drew, what do you do? Well, I'm a publicist for people like Tulsi Gabbard and Ben Carson and Charlie Kirk, and I'm a columnist at the Daily Signal. It's like, there's no hiding, you know what I mean? My political...
Right.
It is who I am, so everyone knows. And everyone knows. And I love it. I don't care. But what it does is all these people who are afraid, some of them are very rich, very successful, own wineries, own whatever, they all come to me. And so I'm like this magnet for, you know, the silent ranks of people who, you know, wish they could, I think, really deep down do what I'm doing. But anyway, yeah, no, it's still blue up here. But, you know, Siebel Newsom, I mean, she's just, like, the Newsoms are exactly what they attack Trump of 24/7, which is so amazing. Like, he attacks Trump about the reflecting pool that he's fixing right now, or building the ballroom with private money. You know, this guy can't build it. And this guy has presided over the worst aspect of the train to nowhere. You know, $14 billion spent already, $15 billion spent, projected to be $237 billion now with a B. And this guy's attacking Trump. This guy can't build anything. We have the worst streets and roads in the country. We have the highest gas taxes. You know, Jennifer Newsom's out there bragging on a, you know, one podcast about how, you know, like she took her kids on a tour of the South. You know, like they went to look at the zoo of all the weirdo rednecks and Republicans, you know. Yeah, I took them on a tour and we went and looked to show them what they shouldn't become. You know, it's like, what a like demonic person. You think that's going to play with half the country when you run for election? All you got to do is play clips of Jennifer Siebel Newsom and you can't win. It doesn't even have to be about them. And, you know, typically the first lady, a good one, you know, they have the ability to kind of cover up for or kind of counteract some of the flaws of, you know, candidates. And every male, like even the best people, even Reagan, you know, wasn't perfect. But, you know, you have a wife out there, a first lady, who can kind of soften some of that, who has some kind of superpower of her own that you don't possess. Because we're not all perfect and good at every single thing. And so you have these first ladies historically who really boost, you know, the president. And she brings them down, you know.
That's a really good point because, you know, we say that quite a bit, that there's no perfect candidate. I mean, they all have flaws. You've got to look at what you're running against and look at, you know, what they represent and what they're going to do if they get elected.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's no perfect candidate.
No. And you know, people can isolate, like with Trump, it's like, oh, he had affairs in the past or whatever else. It's like, yeah, you know, there comes a time where I don't care about someone's personal life or, you know, their past failures, because at the end of the day, you know, I'd rather you have affairs but not be a communist trying to destroy the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't care if you live the perfect life, you know, with your wife or husband or spouse or whatever else, and you drink tea together every night at 6:30 and you never missed one in 46 years. Like, I don't care if you do that, but your policies are, let's destroy the country. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'll take the guy that has the affairs, all right? Because he's not ruining my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, it's, you know, you look at the things that they've done, and as long as they can hide this gas thing, I don't think that'll go past the election. But at this point, you know, people are kind of buying it because they're denying that this is a problem, and it's just, it's right there.
Yeah, I was forced to painfully watch every single one of these gubernatorial debates to cover them for the Daily Signal. And no one should have to endure that, but I did. And maybe y'all did too. Some of us have to for work. But it was just astonishing, debate after debate after debate, to watch like how bad these Democratic candidates are. That they can't own anything. And that it is Trump, Trump, Trump. And, you know, I mean, either Republican candidate, Chad Bianco or Steve Hilton, are 1,000 times better than even Matt Mahan, who they want to pretend is, you know, some sort of moderate version of communism. But it was just, every debate was just like the same thing. And to look at this crowded, this field of Becerra, who is so crooked and so corrupt, who's failed in every single position he's ever had.
Yep.
Like, this guy is potentially their leading, you know, candidate right now. Or you look at Katie Porterhouse. I mean, Porter, sorry. Freudian slip.
Katie Mashed Potato. Yeah.
Yeah, Katie Mashed Potatoes, who dumped the scalding hot mashed potatoes on her ex's head, you know, the whiteboard warrior, screaming at, you know, her staff and berating them.
I'm just sad Swalwell dropped out. I was sad when Swalwell left. That was a bummer. It was good entertainment.
I was sitting in some taco shop though before all this stuff came out. And I was just like, my wife was like clenching my arm, like, Drew, don't do it. Don't say anything. Don't get involved in this. Because a group of, you know, Napa elite women and men, and they were having a conversation about how they, and they were, you know, oh, Swalwell's my favorite. He's so amazing. I'm going to vote for Swalwell. I just think he's the greatest guy ever. And my wife's just grabbing me like I'm on a leash. And I'm like, I'm
don't
about to,
do
about
it.
To, You know,
she and Bill should meet.
Banger. Yeah, yeah, they should. They should. But I got that whole thing wrong with Swalwell because I thought, you know, prevailing wisdom, and I was guilty of it. I thought that, you know, they took him out, you know, to save their chances before the primary, but they actually did it to prevent him from making it onto the ballot because if this had come out, because the likelihood of Chad Bianco and Steve Hilton going forward are like zero. You know, it's going to be, right. Hopefully we get one of them and it looks like it's going to be Steve Hilton. That's always been, I think, what everyone understood was going to happen. So everyone knew, okay, Steve Hilton's probably going to make it. And let's hope he does, but he's probably going to make it. But the Democrats were looking at this thing and they're like, oh my gosh, like Swalwell somehow is like the leading, like by far the leading Democrat candidate. Like, we all know what he did. We know it's going to come out. It's better to blow him up now so that you don't have them both on the ballot, and then we have the, you know, October surprise, and then we definitely elect Steve Hilton. You know, I think that's actually what happened.
Well, that makes perfect sense, too.
Yeah.
Well, but what doesn't make perfect sense is his behavior has been going on for years and years, and nobody knew about it.
How can you sleep with a Chinese spy that goes public and you're still in Congress? People still elect you.
Everybody knew about it.
That's, you know, I always say they're not electing each other, and they don't elect themselves. So who do we really need to blame? You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, he's the tip of the iceberg. That's what's so astonishing about all this. And I got to say, I mean, I don't want to open up a can of worms with the audience and you guys. This isn't meant to be
We love worms. I don't have any songs about it,
well,
but we love worms.
Well, I think that Swalwell likes some worms, too. I think he's probably got a few after his sexual history. But
I was
anyway,
going to say, after we saw some of those videos, you...
Yeah, that was unreal. But I was going to say, what's crazy is, like, you have all these congressmen, even Republicans, who are demanding, you know, justice for the Epstein victims, and they want all the Epstein files, and, you know, they got them, you know, $3-6 million. There's been no justice, but that's a whole other conversation. I can explain why. Everyone was sold a pipe dream to begin with as it relates to the Epstein stuff. But anyway, all this stuff, I'm not saying it's right. There should be accountability, but it happened, you know, over a decade ago. You've got Swalwell, which proves that this same type of behavior, sexual misconduct, promiscuity, and worse, is happening with sitting members of Congress. And you don't see any of these people demanding for the Epstein files to demand, you know, access and transparency for the $17 million slush fund that we pay for to pay off all these NDAs and everything for sexual harassment, sexual assault, sexual whatever, claims to go away with sitting members of Congress. And you mean to tell me that, you know, Eric Swalwell's best friends in Congress that hung out with him, like that guy from Arizona who ditched his pregnant wife, served her divorce papers, Gallego, Ruben Gallego.
Okay.
You mean he didn't know about it? Of course he knew about it. They all knew about it. And that's the whole thing. But here's the other thing. It's okay in America to sleep with a Chinese spy and be compromised. Then you can be actually elevated and put on an intelligence committee. but you can't go and sleep with, you know, some hooker or something like that. But the spy thing's cool. We're cool with that.
Yeah, we're good with the spy thing. But the fake Russia deal, let's drag that forward. It's interesting. I've had a lot of people ask, you know, well, what's a really good definitive source for news and that sort of thing? And really, honestly, the biggest problem right now is there's so much information that it goes one of two ways. People wind up down the wrong rabbit hole and they believe a bunch of crap that isn't true. I just got an email. I should forward it to you just for fun reading, where they believe that Princess Diana didn't really die in the car crash. She was actually whisked away and then put through some sort of magical physical transformation, and she became Melania Trump, who... I sent you the email. You didn't read it yet? Yeah. And I'm reading this thing. It's like, what? And then she was inserted into Donald Trump's life, so that's how the British have so much control. And I'm like, dear God. Like, people actually.
Oh, well, that's.
I mean,
that's
what
believable.
The heck?
I believe that. I thought you were gonna say she turned into Candace Owens, but it's just Melania Trump.
It's just Melania
Trump.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah, totally.
That's, yeah.
So you've got that stuff, and people wind up slurp down that hole, or then suddenly there's just this overwhelming thing, and then people go, I don't watch any of it. Like they just completely unplug. But on that note, we have to take a really quick break so we can listen to the news. Alex had a brilliant idea. We found a song for Mrs. Newsom and Mr. Newsom. So brought to you by We the People Radio.
US.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on the fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." On the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Bad to the bone.
I guess I could go for either one of them, but there you go. Newsom, the musical. Back to you, Drew.
Bad to the bone.
No pressure.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think about all these candidates on the Democrat side running for governor. And it's like, you think it couldn't get any worse. And then it's like, how is it that they can be so bad that they make Newsom look like, you know, desirable? You know, at least he's got good hair.
Actually, you know? Actually, the part that blows my mind is that it makes Jerry Brown look normal now. Jerry Brown looks like a complete moderate now.
You shouldn't have said that. That's really sad and depressing.
Isn't it?
That's really, yeah.
I know, yeah. Right? That's like slam your head in your own locker if we were still in high school, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not good.
Well, and I think it's so outrageous, too, that, I mean, like, none of these scandals stick to anybody. Like, Newsom, I don't know if Californians even know this. I think many of them do, though. But Gavin Newsom is spending close to $19 million with our taxpayer money. He already spent it to hire a crisis PR firm to whitewash his record. We are paying for propaganda for his 2028 presidential run. And by the way, the crisis PR firm that he hired is the same one that Saudi Arabia hired. It's the biggest one in the world. The same one that Saudi Arabia hired after they killed Khashoggi, the journalist. To run ads like, Saudi Arabia's not that bad. We kill, you know, journalists, but come here, you're safe. Non-journalists will not, no harm will come to non-journalists, okay?
Yeah.
There
you go.
As long as
your phones at home.
As long as you don't try to bring a pen into our country, you're fine. Oh.
Yeah. But that's who we hired. It's so outrageous, you know? And you know, we talk about these things and joke about them. We have to joke about them to survive because there's so much just, like, unbelievable stuff happening every day. We got to keep fighting and moving forward. I know this isn't related to Trump or to collusion, but, I think we covered a lot of ground.
I think we left that a while ago.
Although I do encourage people. Yeah, we left it. But, I mean, people need to read it. They need to understand it. But, I'm 39. I've got two kids. I'm married. I live in Napa Valley. And I'm tempted to leave the state all the time. Actually, I have my own time of the month. And my time of the month is I get my PGE bill, and it says $1,000 or $1,500.
Yeah.
And,
is that crazy?
And I just think, like, this, it's, yeah, and it's, I don't live in a mansion. I mean, I live in an expensive area of, I mean, anyone in California lives in expensive, but I live in an expensive area. I get that. But my electric use, it's not, it's such a scam. And, you know, one of the reasons it's gone up 30-40%, you know, year after year, is because the state of California sued PGE and settled for $2 billion. Well, guess who pays the $2 billion? We do. So they just turn around and give it to us. Like, people are so, it's just, and I see people when I talk about these issues or when Daily Signal posts like a reel I do about it on Instagram or I write about it, and the Democrats like defend it. I'm like, you know, like, you know, the PG bill is 15. I tell anybody outside of California that, and their minds are like they have their own meltdowns. Like, they cannot believe it.
Yeah.
You know? And the people in California, their Democrats, are just like, well, that's the price you pay to live here. It's so beautiful. I'm like, what does that have to do with, like, the weather?
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't have to live like this, is my point. But their argument's like, yeah, who cares that the government's the most corrupt in the world? Who cares that there's, you know, $500 trillion worth of fraud? Who cares that we have the train to nowhere?
I was going to say, who cares that we haven't laid one inch of track for the high-cost rail? Yeah.
That's right.
But
yeah,
it's so beautiful here. Track. You know, it's beautiful here.
Yeah, Connecticut was beautiful when I lived there. Washington was beautiful when I lived there. I mean, yeah, a lot of beautiful places.
Yeah.
It's just frustrating.
I'm staying. I'm fighting. I decided to stay and fight, even though I could live somewhere else and just feel rich every single day, instead of, like, every day feeling like, oh, man, okay, I got to keep some money rolling in because, you know, who knows if my bill's going to be $1,000 or $1,500 this month, you know?
Well,
or the water. Not to talk about water. I mean, it's like, all of it's so insane, but it's all self-inflicted. And my point is, it's so crazy that so many people in the state, they just, like, they're, like, detached. It's like, they complain about it, too. But then they don't. But they're like, they accept it. Like, you like, we don't have to have $7 gas. We don't have to.
No.
Our electric bills don't have to be $1,500 a month. So why would you want them to be? Just because you're a Democrat? Are you stupid?
Well, we have enough. I mean, we've learned from the oil and gas guys that the state of California was walled off as a fuel island because they had so much oil and they had so much capacity to produce and refine that we could be like Alaska and give dividends to our citizens or not have property tax or whatever you want to get rid of and replace it with energy because we have enough here to actually cover our own needs and export. Instead, they've cut back our refining capacity and started importing from people who hate us, who are gross polluters. And that's considered...
It's crazy. And it's dirtier.
And that's considered noble. It's like, oh dear.
Yeah.
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 At some point, those choices will have to be changed. You know, people will have to get an idea. I think the people in the Palisades are kind of a cautionary tale. You know, they saw how much fun we were having up here with our fires and the inability to rebuild and the onerous insanity of regulatory overreach.
Yeah, now it's on them.
Yeah. Like,
I moved to the Napa Valley in 2020. That's when we had the major fires. Well, y'all part of that too, I guess. You know, it was such a big fire. But I was sitting actually in a winery back then in 2020. I was sitting in a winery closer to Calistoga, as north as you can go in the Napa Valley. And I was looking south back towards Napa. And I'm just watching the world burn while I'm, like, drinking a glass of wine. It was really surreal.
Yeah.
And we had to evacuate, and we evacuated to Napa, and then the ash was hitting Napa. And you know, and then you find out, of course, like, it's self-inflicted. Like, what do you think's going to happen when you just have, like, a bunch of... kindle, you know, like, kindling, like, ready. You know, you can't remove trees, and, you know, I read these stories about people who, you know, remove trees from their own lots for whatever reason. I don't care whether they do it for fire prevention or anything else. It's on their property, and they're getting fined, like, $1 million. This is down closer towards, like, Oakland or something like that. I just read the story about a family that's being fined, like, $1 million because they removed trees, and the city, you know, told them, you can't do that. These are the special trees, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there were people in the Palisades area that said when Forest Service tried to go in and clear areas that were a fire hazard, they wouldn't let them because it was a scar on the land. Well, guess what? Well, you got yourself a big scar now.
You're a bombed out hole.
Yeah.
Well, we have a lady running against Jared Huffman. I mean, in our crazy politics. I mean, there's no way we'll elect a Republican against Jared Huffman because no D's are, you know, moving over to the R column. But we do have an independent who is one of the last ranchers on Point Reyes, Nicolette Nyman. And so she was up here this past week. And, you know, you would think, oh, you live in Marin County. Like, that should be, you should be part of the favored crew. They got zero help from Jared Huffman, their congressman. So she's like, you know what? Maybe I ought to run against him. because this is terrible.
Yeah.
And it's happening to all these people in the counties that they have stolen. So Modoc, Siskiyou, and Shasta, we have lots of problems with natural resources up here. And he absolutely, his track record should speak for itself. But it is interesting that still is a really heavy lift, because you have a lot of people who are like, oh, well, an independent can't win. And it's like, well, you know, I think maybe the game has changed a little bit depending on where you are.
Well, yeah, well, I know Elaine Kalati, who's running as an independent, no party preference technically,
yeah, right,
for governor, and she's sharp. I love her, honestly. I mean, you know, if I'd advised her, I would have told her to just run as a Republican. But, you know, I mean, I think she was very principled to run as an independent. She thought that was the way to go, and for all the best intentions and reasons. But like, she's been totally shut out.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know?
See, in a race like that,
I watch her a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, in a race like that, yeah, it's super polarized. In a race like ours up here, where it's heavy Democrat advantage, especially over on the coast, to pull somebody from over in that area who is actually an independent, isn't a hiding, you know, a Democrat hiding as an independent, always been one. And it's like, well, that's a different calculation. So we're looking to see what happens. You know, what do people do, and what do we have after June? And
well, I'm curious, you know, when you look at all these people like down in the Palisades that lost everything, and for reasons, again, that were self-inflicted, do you think, you know, I've always said that when it hits them in the pocketbook, they'll wake up. Well, boy, it hit them in the pocketbook big time. Do you think they're going to rethink their political views, you know, being they're still living in a trailer or a hotel because they can't get permits to rebuild?
Yeah.
I mean, what's it going to take?
Yeah. I mean, if that doesn't do it, nothing will, honestly, I think. You know, it's just wild, because you can, you know, what's happened in California is textbook. I mean, this is what banana Republicans have done to themselves. This is like Venezuela. I mean, you know, the middle class has been virtually eradicated in this state, and you know they're going to run out of other people's money, as Margaret Thatcher said soon.
Yep.
I mean, and that's the thing. It's like this fake balanced budget that Gavin Newsom is recently celebrating as some kind of success story. I mean, you're required. You don't have a choice but to balance the budget, because we have an amendment that forces that anyway. But it's just creative accounting. And all these billionaires and their companies are fleeing. They're lucky that the stock market for AI and, you know, military defense has done well, so that they got, you know, a bunch of billions in the bank to move some money around to propose this, you know, balanced budget. But, like, 6 months from now, that's not going to be the scenario, you know? People are leaving, and there's no incentive for them to stay. And it's like, you know, like, you can't, like, at some point, it's not the billionaires that are going to come after. It's going to be the millionaires,
yep,
you know? And then they're going to have to come for someone else after that. And I just think that all this stuff they talk about on the debate stage and everything else about the money they need to pay for, they can't cut, you know, the gas tax because we need these amazing roads that apparently these gas tax dollars are paying for, even though I can't drive without getting a flat tire. There's never a talk about the fraud. You know, if they would address the fraud, there's more money that's gone from fraud, more than enough to cover all this crap that they want.
Exactly. They wouldn't have to raise taxes if they could just manage and get rid of the fraud that goes on.
Was there any
in California?
Since you did watch all of the debates, was there any, I don't know, anything that surprised you? I mean, anybody who was actually not as bad as you thought, or not as crazy as you thought?
Well, when they added Villaraigosa to the stage for that one debate, the one before the most recent one, I mean, please do not mistake me for thinking he's like good or would be a good governor, but I was actually surprised at how well he handled himself. He came across as very, for the most part, reasonable compared to the rest of the people on there. But there, I can't believe what a loon. Actually, Tom Steyer, that guy is a nutcracker, nut job.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's the biggest lunatic I've ever seen in my life. He is scary. And, you know, he's an authoritarian. Becerra has the authoritarian mentality too. You know, he was asked by, he was confronted, Becerra was confronted by Hilton on this. You know, he's like, you know, I'll just declare an emergency, and then I will like tell all the insurance companies what they have to do. And it's like, bro,
that's not a
thing. You read the state constitution? Have you read it? Like, you actually can't do that. That's like not law. He's like, well, I'm going to try anyway. It's like, dude, okay.
That's how you're going to fix it.
Sad part is they couldn't redistrict either, but they did it. The Constitution clearly said they can't do it, but oh well, we need to do it anyway.
They took our district and cut it into three pieces.
There just seems like there's less and less law and order in this state.
And I think that's what makes people kind of tune it out in a way. Unfortunately,
I read an article the other day that over 100,000 people have moved to Texas. I forget over what last two years or something out of California alone, just Texas. I mean, they're moving out in droves.
We're gonna be alone, Drew. We're gonna do a lot of radio together in the future.
Yeah, there won't be anybody to listen to it though.
Yeah, but we'll have a good time, won't we?
Yes, we will.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as we got that squared away.
Exactly.
Well, we have very much enjoyed our time with you, ranging through all these topics. We will have to touch base soon, and honestly, when you have stuff, give us a holler, and come on, we like doing this in long form. It's a lot more fun than the usual stuff people get to listen to. So,
yes.
Drew Thomas Allen, author of Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, The Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion. Definitely read it. And definitely listen to his podcast. We have that all linked up at the site. Thanks, Drew.
Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
You too.
All right.
You're listening to We the People Radio.
.us.
Stop me now. I'm having such a good time.